right. Good morning, everyone. All right. Let me start by saying I have no disclosures to make. I want to just ask anyone here, has anybody participated in Dialogue for Health or heard of Dialogue for Health? Just raise your hand. Yay, one, two percent. I hope you have, young lady. And then the second question, has anybody heard about the National Leadership Academy for the Public's Health? Okay, two hands, this is really good. So then you all have a lot to hear from me. So I want to talk about a couple of things. First of all, I want to tell you why Dialogue for Health, and I'm going to occasionally say D for H because it's easier to get out of my mouth than Dialogue for Health sometimes. What Dialogue for Health is, talk a little bit about what its impact has been, and then talk about how it has been supporting us in building the Leadership Academy, the National Leadership Academy for the Public's Health. So let me define a web form for you. We call it a web forum, and it's an online meeting to present findings, ask questions, and discuss current matters to health in its broadest sense. So these are conversations, and probably everybody else knows this is a webinar, but it's an interactive webinar. This is our mission. Let me talk about why we have Dialogue for Health, why we came up with the idea. Back in about 2000, when I started getting much more involved in APHA at the leadership level, I started to realize that there were a couple of trends that were sort of disturbing to me. One is that we are a graying workforce and that the average age of public health worker was 55. The second was that the fastest growing undergraduate major was public health. And I kept thinking, so what's happening to all these undergraduates and why aren't we having this happen so that we have more people coming into public health? And I found out that a lot of young people were just going into environmental health organizations and other public service organizations, very public service minded, but they weren't finding us. And, you know, I thought, well, so where do they live? Well, they live in the internet. And where does the public health community live? Well, they use the internet for email. And that was the truth at the time that I started thinking about this. So I thought, well, what could we do to change that a little bit? Maybe we should have a public health function that is the combination of talk of the nation, you know, compelling conversations, and mix that with TED Talks, but TED Talks about public health. And let's make it intersectoral, because one of the things we really suffer from in public health is getting more and more siloed and more isolated, and people don't know what we do or who we are. My own family has a hard time with that. So how do we have a conversation that involves a lot of different points of view around health as a topic with a public health fundamental infrastructure? And that's how Dialogue for Health was born. This is a very cost-effective way of having national and sometimes even international conversations. I'll describe what this looks like in just a minute, but first of all, it's cost-effective. Second of all, it's got a small carbon footprint. Third of all, we reach a very large audience. We reach an audience around the world. And within this country, we reach very diverse audiences. Now, I want to point out that nearly half, 42% of our current users have been government workers. And part of the reason for that, as we poll our audience, is because they say they don't hear this stuff anyplace else. Or there are training opportunities within the content that's presented, or the kinds of speakers that we're bringing to the web forum, to D4H, are really good, and they've never heard them speak, and they want to hear them speak, and they want to ask them questions. And so 42% government workers, I think that's really quite wonderful. But we also are getting business, we're getting advocates, we're getting media, healthcare, community, education, and we're seeing people from all over the country. When we say West, we're actually counting all the way from New Mexico straight up, so it's a big chunk of land. And we are really seeing a lot of participation from the South, Midwest, and the Northeast. And this has been fairly consistent. We've had a great growth of events and meetings. Currently, the total is 596, and actually that total is a little bit off because it's now 600 plus. That total was as of July. So we have been growing significantly every year. There is a growing interest in Dialogue for Health. The number of attendees have consistently been going up. That last two, those last two only count up through July of this year. We have seen, in terms of subscribers, the subscriber base is growing every month. We've got 16,000 subscribers. We actually have more than that now, but at this, as of the end of 2012, we had 16,500 subscribers. A subscriber is somebody who comes to the website and puts down their name that they want to get a regular email from me personally to them that says so-and-so is going to be speaking on such and such a topic. Now, who's a so-and-so? It might be Dick Jackson talking about the built environment, or it might be Jonathan Fielding talking about Healthy People 2020. So these are the emails that you'll get from me about it, and it's a personal one. It's absolutely just to you, and nobody else is getting this very same one. We have had 41,000 attendees so far as a total. So we've hit a lot. These are all different. These are all unique registrants, and we've hit a lot of people across the country. And we do count registrations as a measure of interest. So who do we get? What does a web form actually look like? Well, we get speakers from diverse backgrounds as often as we can. I want to have a non-siloed conversation. If we're talking about public health and physical activity, we want to hear somebody from somebody who's a planner. We want to hear from somebody who's trying to form policy at a local level. We want to hear from somebody who's a community member. But we want people who are experienced, who are well-spoken, who have a point to make, and those are the kinds of people that we're getting because our ranks from our ratings from our audience are above 90% in terms of quality and in terms of usefulness. We're putting together creative content, and we also make a whole series of web resources available to people. So it might be a document, it could be a website, there might be several papers, and certainly all the slides that are presented during the web forum are there. We have float questions to keep people engaged. We do polls in order to find out what our listening public is thinking about. We sometimes turn those polls then into stories that we put into the news media as best we can, but we have the ability to say, well, you know, 1,000 people were listening on the issue of obesity, and this is what they think is important. And then that becomes a story that we can put out there. So the picture in the lower left-hand corner is one from the UN, and I thought it was really pretty important because there's a lot of people in that room. We get more than that in our web forums. So we've had 1,000 people on our web forums. We've had over 1,000 people. We try to keep it at 1,000 because over 1,000 the price goes up considerably for us. But under 1,000, we're really pleased. We try to get that 700 to 1,000 folks on a web forum. We don't have to go over that one. So why is this important? Well, what we're trying to do is we're trying to move policy and programs. We're trying to have people think about things in a new way. We're trying to activate people that are out there. We're trying to help people find new solutions and new ways of thinking, and we're trying to have an impact. So on a web forum that we did on keeping the prevention dollars in the Affordable Care Act, we asked people what action were they going to take following the web forum. And these are the answers they gave us, including identifying folks that could speak about the value of prevention and including pitching a story to the local press. Those were important actions. They're very helpful to us to know other folks who can speak to the press or people who can be identified, because the press doesn't just want to hear from the same person all the time. This was one in which we were looking at food policy, advertising, and children. And we asked our audience this was simulcast in English and in Spanish, whether the government ought to prohibit advertising unhealthy food and beverages to young children. Well, not surprisingly, our audience said yes. And interesting to me, the Spanish-speaking audience was even more emphatic in their opinion on that topic. This is from a web forum that we did on the importance of obesity in the Latino community. And we asked people, so what are you going to do now? And the organized neighbors to take action was something that was quite significant in the Spanish-speaking community. although the one more significant in the English-speaking was phone or write letters to elected officials. So these are statements of why the web forum was important to people, what did it change for them, and I think it's important to know here, people say they're going to change how they live. They are going to use the materials from the web forum to produce other material, other content for other audiences, and they're going to teach their children. So, what I've described to you so far is what we call our Dialogue for Health Open Air Series. It's the series that anybody can sign up for. It's free, and the way you get it is to go to dialogueforhealth.org and just sign up, and you'll get that personal email from me inviting you to register for whatever topic, whoever we have as a person who's speaking. The second way that we use Dialogue for Health is to support some of our programs. And so I want to talk for a minute about the National Leadership Academy for the Public's Health, which is another program that I'm running. This is funded by the Centers for Disease Control, and we are right now within the application accepting process. We will be open for applications until the 24th of this month, and so I want to just sort of put that little bug in your ear in case you have an interest in this Leadership Academy. What we're talking about within this Leadership Academy is solving for wicked problems. We're trying to get communities that are interested in solving the problems that are not solvable by any one department, any one agency, but that really require a coordinated, collaborative, community-involved approach towards moving towards a better state of health. For example, obesity in a community, or for example, violence in a community. No one sector is responsible for that. So how do you get different sectors together in a way that that supports change? We're looking at how you leverage the assets and partnerships that are already present in the community, how you build relationships, how you strengthen collaborations, how you build a vision of health in a community, and what are the skill sets that are needed to support that. We are embedding public health principles within this. We want to drive the adoption of evidence-based policies. We want to align medicine and public health. We want to see health outcomes improve and by moving towards greater health equity. This is a program in which we've really tried to move away from the notion of just developing the leadership of individuals. Rather, what we're doing is we're working with teams. So we are inviting teams of four from anywhere in the country to pull together and to make pull together an idea, or to have an idea that they're already working on, and to come to our site, look at the application, and think about what they're doing, what their vision is, and how they would create a team that might move in a year's time towards a better definition, better effectiveness in bringing more people to the table, strengthening relationships within their community with sectors that maybe they haven't worked with before, like for perhaps public safety, or perhaps the churches in their community, but sectors that they haven't worked effectively with in the past. How do you bring all of these forces together? Because there's a lot of capacity there. Bring them together and move them towards a goal of greater health in a community. Just a little bit of background. We've had 2 years so far. We're opening our third year, and you can see that they're well spread across the country. We so far have had, what's the current number? Applications downloaded? We've had 81
from 35 states and 4 territories.
So 35 states, 4 territories have downloaded applications. So we're getting a lot of interest for year 3. The key program elements, and this is where Dialogue for Health comes in. First of all, all the teams have to define a project area that they're going to work towards. But the second thing is that we do an on-site learning. And so I think similar to, you know, the previous presenter, that on-site is really very important because it sets some ground rules and it helps people get to know each other. And we do use MBTI, for example, although we use it in order to develop a team picture. So we're really trying to move towards that concept of team, but we work very hard with people to get them to coalesce with each other, to identify other folks within the cohort that are working on the same kind of program, to see what they have that's similar, look at what kinds of challenges that they face that are alike. Following that, we have a series of webinars, and this is where Dialogue for Health comes in. It supports the ongoing learning throughout the year and allows people in the next box to form into communities of practice. So folks that are working on tobacco or folks that are working on violence can then come together. People that are working on collective impact, they can come together and they can start to share some of their stories and some of their findings. Coaching is an important element, but I'm not going to go into that right now. And we are using continuous quality improvement throughout the process in order to adjust our curriculum and adjust what we're doing, making sure that we're relevant on a month-by-month basis. So, if you have any questions about Dialogue for Health, this is the website for Dialogue for Health. You can look at our Twitter feed and you can see our Facebook page. And if you have any questions about the Health Leadership Academy, healthleadership.org is our website, and it is the National Leadership Academy for the Public's Health. So thank you very much.